Hello and welcome to AL.com's Friday Flick Fix. I am your host, Francesca Scalisi. With me, as always, are Ben Stephen Flanagan and Matthew David Scalisi. And hello. Let's talk about this week's releases. Journey the number two, The Mysterious Island, starring The Rock, Michael Caine, and Vanessa Hudgens. That sounds like a winning combination. Michael Caine, Hudge, come on.
The Hudge,
The Rock. And the PETA from Hunger Games, but I don't know what that actor's name is.
I don't either.
But he's like the main... it's funny to me that he didn't get...
Well, I think the original... And look, I didn't see Journey to the Center of the Earth, but I think the actual... What makes this a sequel is that it's Michael Caine and that kid. The guy.
What is his name?
Josh Hutcherson.
Oh, look at you piping in.
There you go. But I could be wrong with that. Was Michael Caine in the first movie, as far as you know, Ben?
I don't know, man. I don't think so, but I don't know.
Yeah. But, I mean, Ben, you mentioned on the earlier podcast that it's an upgrade to go from Brendan Fraser to The Rock. And I actually agree. I like Brendan Fraser in some things, but The Rock, anything I've ever seen him in, he's actually, even though he's done some really stupid trailers, right? The thing where it's like, he's a football player and his daughter bedazzles his ball. But like...
His ball? What on earth?
But the stuff that I've actually seen him act in, he's very likable. And
no, you know what he is? He's the jock at school who wasn't an asshole. And whoa. So, because he was like kind of funny, everybody was like, he's hilarious because he was the cool guy and he was a little bit funny as opposed to actually being funny. That's what he is. Like, he's so good looking, and he made kind of a funny face.
Somebody's being presumptuous. Sounds like you've never... What have you seen of The Rock's?
I've seen the trailers of the movie.
Okay.
I saw some of The Tooth Fairy. That was dumb.
No, actually...
You're basing your entire...
The Tooth Fairy were funny. We laughed at that.
Steve Merchant was in it.
Right?
We weren't laughing at him. Again, I'm just saying, he's got this vibe, like... I have a very specific personality type with which, you know, like, they're such a pretty guy that any kind of, like...
It sounds like you're bringing some personal stuff to this.
Yeah.
It sounds like you don't like him because he comes off as a jock to you.
No,
you're basing your entire opinion on The Rock's acting ability on part of the Tooth Fairy.
What else has he done?
He was in The Scorpion King, although that wasn't really much.
Come on, Matt. He's in The Scorpion King? Okay, he's in a really good action movie called The Rundown, and he's very good in it. Most recently, he was in the very good Fast Five, which is a fifth movie in a franchise, but is actually a really good, fairly well-written action movie, and he's excellent in it. And hear me out here, guys. I know y'all are going to scoff at this, Matt. I know you've never been a fan, and you don't get it. But some of the best acting I've ever seen is The Rock when he was in the WWE.
Right. Oh, I knew that's where it was going.
And Matt and Francesca, you can have a special appreciation for this.
Can I?
And I don't know if you guys have seen the South Park episode about wrestling,
right.
But it's all theater. It is all
kind of acting, Ben. I think. Look, I do have an appreciation for the kind of performances that go on in professional wrestling, but I don't really think it's an absolute one-to-one translation to
movie acting. Yeah, if that's what you think theater
acting,
is,
you know?
Grief.
Well, no, it is a form
it is
of
a
it.
Form of theater.
It's a
form
kabuki. Of it. It's not like...
Yeah, but whatever. It is... They're playing to a room full of thousands.
Tens of thousands
right.
of people there performing
but,
a storyline.
Really
there is a narrative.
It's not really the same kind of acting, and that's why you typically don't see... I think The Rock is an exception to that, Ben, because that's why you really don't see a lot of professional wrestlers becoming actors. At least not, you know, successful movie actors.
He has the perfect face for a record scratch. How about that?
Well, look, I mean,
I
don't think that this movie looks particularly good. I mean, it could be pretty entertaining, and I might catch it on HBO in the future, like Francesca said. But I think The Rock is a really engaging leading man, and I think he does well in these family films. He's appealing to a lot of different people and demographics. And I just, you know, if he's in a movie, he's not a warning sign to me because I know that he's going to contribute something. Like, there was this movie several years ago called Be Cool that was a sequel to Get Shorty.
Yeah,
and it's so bad. It's awful. But he really was one of the good things about it. He gives a nice performance in it. And the fact that he was able to, you know, resurrect something out of a turd like that, that is talent to me. And I'll give the guy a chance generally every time.
I'm still waiting to see him get an actual substantive role, like a lead role in a major tentpole release, because he really hasn't. You know, they've kind of hid him away. Even this movie, I'm sure it's a fairly large budget movie, but they never really put The Rock in anything truly significant, any really valuable franchises. They haven't really given him a shot at one of them.
I bet he gets it. I bet he gets it one day, and people are going to be writing about how great he was in the movie. And it would not surprise me a few years down the road if The Rock ends up getting Oscar consideration for a performance. You laugh
I don't know
now.
About that, but I wouldn't be surprised if he
laugh now.
If he gets the roles that, say, somebody like Sam Worthington is getting right now. Somebody who just doesn't bring anywhere near that kind of sort of charisma and likability. All right, okay. Let's move to Safe House.
All right, so Safe House. There it is.
Yeah, well, so Francesca, I don't think you've even seen like a trailer for this,
no,
have you?
I had no idea that this movie existed.
It looks, I don't think we're going to have a lot to say about it because it looks like this sort of string.
An unlikely partnership. No, they don't like each other, but in the end, they like each other.
It's honestly, you know, and I don't like Ryan Reynolds. I don't have any particular fondness for him. But the Denzel Washington thing, it does seem, Ben, like he's gotten really lazy ever since Training Day. And that's kind of, you see that happen to a lot of people that when they have gone for a long time in their career working really hard to try and get that Oscar, and they get it. And then it's like they just sort of go on repeat for whatever won them that Oscar.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. It does seem like he's incredibly lazy. He keeps churning out these thriller vehicles where he plays similar characters to one another. And look, I was a big fan of Unstoppable, and I'm generally interested in whatever he's doing with Tony Scott. I mean, they've made movies that sort of resemble each other and often reflect each other, but I think they're entertaining at least. And Denzel Washington is one of the better and more charismatic star actors that we have out there. I mean, I still really like the guy. And yeah, he's got two Oscars under his belt, so that should suggest that he's capable of doing that again in the future. But yeah, it just sort of seems like he's phoning it in with these thrillers, and he could do a lot better. I mean, I have hopes that this movie Safe House is, you know, fair if not good, but I just can't say that I'm jazzed about seeing it. And here's one thing I want to point out is that this movie suffers this this disease, it seems, that movie posters have, where on the poster the tagline is bigger than the title, you know? So, like, on the poster it says "No one is safe" in big red letters across Denzel Washington's body, and like right under that in tiny white letters, it says Safe House. So it's like, what the hell is this movie called anyway?
Ben is a real student, for those who don't know, of movie posters. He's quite a connoisseur of movie posters. And he, I don't know, Ben, do you want me to promo your blog?
Sure.
Ben has a Tumblr account, which I believe is, Ben Around, right? BenArOund.
That's right.
.tumblr.com. And from time to time, Ben will do these posts where he looks at – what you typically do is you sort of are calling out people who are ripping off older posters.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's called Posters by Coasters. How clever is that?
Right. It's pretty clever.
It's great. I actually really enjoy those. I think our listeners should go check that out.
It's really sad, too, because, I mean, I'll – managed to spot these trends, and I'll know for a fact that an incredibly obscure movie that nobody has seen or is embarrassed to have seen has been ripped off by something fairly new. So I enjoy doing them. I think they're interesting, but I'm usually embarrassed after I've done them.
Well, Ben, let me ask you, what is your issue with Vera Farmiga?
I just don't really find her that engaging. I get kind of bored by her performances. I didn't really fall for her in Up in the Air like so many people did, and I was kind of surprised that that was an automatic Oscar nomination. I mean, I think that she's fine. I think she's a good actress, but I just can't say that I'm just as enthralled by her as everybody else. I mean, it's hard. It's unfair for me to say she's the weak link in a movie like The Departed when she's basically a relative unknown going up against this huge A-list cast, but she was the weak link of The Departed, you know? And so, yeah, I mean, and I saw Source Code, which was dull anyway. I don't blame that on her, but it was a just thankless role. I hear she's got a new movie out on DVD now that she actually directed and stars in. And it's,
oh, yeah, Higher Ground, I think it was called.
Yeah, and I hear that's pretty good. And there's another movie that she's in that I can't remember the name of now that people seem to be crazy over. That was came out, I think, before The Departed, which is probably what got her that role.
She's done a lot of work in the last few years. She's really been out there.
I mean, that's the thing. I'm with you. That baffles me is, like, people act like she's, like, a big deal, and she's just not very charismatic. Like, she's, you know, she gets the job done, but, like, there's nothing special about her. There's nothing that stands out, you know, to me about her. She's just a woman of a certain age, and she's, like, okay, you know, like, I haven't seen anything that has blown me away with her.
She's Cate Blanchett without the acting ability.
Exactly. I mean, well, exactly. Like, she can disappear in a role like Cate Blanchett can, but then she's not, like, dynamic. And Cate Blanchett
is. And she's not particularly attractive either.
Yeah, I just don't get it. She has a weird face. She
that's
kinda,
a little unfair.
She kind of reminds me of Maggie Gyllenhaal, who was another one that I'm like, I don't quite get what the thing is.
I mean, fair.
And they kind of look like each other, too, I think.
Fair or not, Ben. I mean, there's a reason movie stars tend to be good-looking people. It's because we're going to look at their faces on a giant wall for 2 hours. So, I mean, it's I'm not, like, criticizing her as a human being for not being that good-looking. I just think she's not a very remarkable presence, and I think her looks are a part of that.
I think that the Steve Buscemi's of the world are insulted right now, Matt.
Right.
Well, I mean, it's kind of got to be one or the other. Like, we hate, you know, the actresses who make it big just on their face, but you understand it, and she's not really charismatic in looks or abilities, it seems like. So it's kind of like, what on earth are you doing being, like, a major star? I just don't get what everybody sees in her. Because, again, she's not bad. She's just not as great as she seems to be made out to be in my eyes. I don't know.
Right. Okay. Let's go on to The Vow then.
All right. So, Francesca, what do you think of Channing Tatum?
Nothing.
You're the female in the podcast.
Yeah. Well, that hasn't seemed to make any difference in The Rock or Ryan Reynolds, has it? He is a human being.
Have you seen Channing Tatum in anything, in any movie?
No. No. Did he do anything when he was a kid?
No, he stripped in Coleman, Alabama.
Then he has. No. My feelings are I don't have any towards him.
Yeah.
Yes. What about you, Matt?
I thought I was pretty impressed with him on Saturday Night Live. I thought he was funnier than I thought he was going to be. He had more mostly just because he seems like he's willing to make fun of himself. He's not trying to really look cool.
On the Twitter, in the Twitter world, and now granted this is because I follow Jonah Hill who retweets these things, but a lot of people are saying 21 Jump Street is both funny and that he's actually very funny in it. So,
Channing Tatum is?
Yeah, which, I mean, you know, that's supposed to be a comedy.
Ben, do you have any expansive thoughts on The Vow at all?
Well, I think that this movie is interesting because I think it could turn into, say, the new Notebook, just this movie that young women fawn over. And because, I mean, think about it, man. It's just got, like, the perfect plot to lure women in, like it's the Pied Piper or something like that. Seriously. I mean, just going over the plot, Francesca mentioned it before, but a car accident puts Rachel McAdams into a coma. And when she wakes up with severe memory loss, this is an amnesia movie, so it's obviously soap opera, you know. Her husband, Channing Tatum, works to win her heart again. So she basically wakes up and forgets the past 5 years,
right.
Which is the amount of time they've been married.
And like The Notebook, she's in a horrible – she basically has something horrible go wrong with her health-wise that
right.
does not affect her face or hair whatsoever.
Right. She's still so beautiful.
Right.
No, I mean, it's interesting. I'm actually kind of curious to see this. And the one big warning sign is Channing Tatum, because I'm not a big fan of his, and I doubt I'm the only person who has ever said that. I think he's one of the dullest on-screen presences in years. I mean, we talked about The Rock being super charismatic and engaging, same with Ryan Reynolds, but Channing Tatum to me is the opposite of that. To me, he just does not command the screen. And I know a lot of it is physical for a lot of people. Women are obviously attracted to him, and good for him. But to me, the guy just reads his lines as dully as human possible.
Well, he's a dancer that somehow parlayed it into an acting career. But like his, you know, as far as I can recall, the origination of his acting career was these Step It Up movies, right?
Step Up, yeah.
Right, where he only got the role because he was a dancer.
Right. But look, man, I mean, at this point, you could probably consider Channing Tatum an A-list movie star.
Yeah, I mean, he's getting a lot of stuff like this now, like The Vow, and he's got the sort of G.I. Joe franchise now, which is, you know, for whatever that's worth. I don't know if the first one was a huge hit, but the second one's being built up as it's, you know, it's going to be one of the big, you know, big releases of the summer, probably.
Weren't we talking about last week how there is a total lack of charisma amongst, like, this generation of quote-unquote stars? He would fall, I think, firmly into that. Maybe we're just getting old, gang, though. Maybe we're not buying what these kids are selling.
I don't think the old people, I don't think that, like, people 30 years ago were going, I don't know about this Tom Hanks character. These movie stars today don't have charisma. I don't think that was happening.
So maybe it's just, as a human race, people are losing charisma.
Well, see, what bothers me here is that one of my favorite directors is fascinated, obviously, with Channing Tatum. I mean, this guy is in Haywire, which is in some theaters right now. And Steven Soderbergh, the director of that, has cast him in his next two movies. And so it just boggles my mind that this guy who, and granted, this is someone who likes to give unknowns with no acting experience lead roles in movies. So clearly he likes to challenge himself by taking bad non-actors and, you know, trying to make them successful. But it just boggles my mind that he would do that with Channing Tatum, who, again, like I said, is one of the dullest actors I've ever seen.
Francesca wants to talk about The Rock being kind of the big, dumb, galoot, you know, jock character. To me, that's really, Channing Tatum comes off as that way, way more than The Rock. He just seems like he's, you know, he has kind of that, like, Lou Ferrigno thing where it's like, it's almost like every part he plays, he's doing a cameo, you know?
Yeah. Okay.
You know what I mean? He's there and he's just trying to get the line out and go home for the day. It's not like he's really trying to craft a performance or anything.
Well, you make it sound like he's like so recognizable, though. I mean, like,
he's been
honestly,
in a bunch of big movies now.
Yeah, but he's got, like, I think I've said this before, too, but he's got a face like a man's thigh. There's just nothing to grab hold of.
Right.
It's just water flowing over me. It just is, there's nothing distinctive or interesting about him at all. And I suppose if I was a younger gal, I might say, well, his abdomen area, his chest cavity is interesting, but it's not.
In another time, he just plays a henchman in every movie, you know?
I guess. But I do like Rachel McAdams, and she does have a number of interesting-looking haircuts throughout the course of this movie. So maybe it is worth seeing.
I'll agree with you, Matt, that he was good on SNL, but it just makes me wonder, why can't he apply that charisma to his film roles? I don't get it. And maybe they don't always call for them.
Because he can't dance in every scene.
Well, and I think he, you know, 21 Jump Street is a comedy. He's doing, I think the Steven Soderbergh one, I think is supposed to be kind of a comedy, right? Maybe?
The Magic male stripper
Knight
one?
Yeah, we don't really know anything about that yet, though.
Well, I got the sense from what I've read that it's, you know, it's not like a heavy drama or anything. So maybe, you know, maybe the era of him as comedian is happening right now. So now we'd like to move on to Star Wars Episode 1. Is that why you just pointed to the screen like that?
I'm just trying to effortlessly flow.
All right, effortlessly. I mean, speaking of Channing Tatum, Star Wars Episode 1, The Phantom Menace in 3D. It's almost like there's nothing to talk about. Like, abusing George Lucas is sort of a sport that has come to a close at this point.
And I've already taken a vow not to abuse George Lucas anymore since he brought a national championship to the state of Alabama again. So I think AL.com, I think we're going to refrain from any George Lucas abuse, which means we probably just have to move on from this movie.
Well, saying that, you've just set up Francesca to abuse the hell out of him.
Right, so. Yeah.
Proceed, Francesca.
No, you know what, though? I can't because, I mean, it is obviously, I've heard the rhetoric. I know what the argument is against him, but I've never been a huge Star Wars fan anyway, so, like, it's just, you know.
You didn't love the original enough to be offended by what he did to it, right?
Right. I mean, I didn't like episode one. I think I did see that in the theater, perhaps.
You and I saw episode three on a date.
That's right, we did.
Yeah.
Oh, buddies. But I know I'm supposed to be offended. Like, I like a lot of people who are heartily offended by him, so. But I just don't like 3D either. Like, to me, this whole trend of re-releasing things as 3D movie is such malarkey. It's just annoying to me. Like, I love Beauty and the Beast. I definitely don't need to see Beauty and the Beast in 3D. Like, don't need to. Now, Finding Nemo actually might be pretty cool in 3D. The fish effect, you know, that's neat in 3D. But anything else, like, it's just... I mean, the thing with George
Lucas...
What about
Monsters, Inc.? They're redoing that one. Are you going to be interested in Monsters, Inc. in 3D?
No. But here's my thing. George Lucas, at this point, the people who loved you the most are now totally offended by you. And this is such a blatant money grab. What? I mean, has he just decided, like, I don't give a crap about the people
no,
who love
he
the
doesn't.
Original Star Wars movies. I'm going to do things to, like, blatantly just whore out this, you know, franchise. Because this is, I mean, honestly, I feel like the whole, like, they came out in whatever it was, 99, and then didn't it come out again as, like, the whole series or something? Like,
yeah.
This is not the first time it's been re-released.
This is at least the third theatrical release for this movie.
It just...
But he's immune to that. He does not... He either doesn't hear the criticism, or he does not care at all. It's been that way since he started, you know, putting out these prequel movies almost, you know, over 10 years ago, and he just doesn't... It's not something that he cares about or thinks about, and it's different from... You know, it's a very different approach from his buddy Steven Spielberg, who seems to really care about the way audiences react to his work and things he does. And, you know, whether he makes the right decisions based on that or not, it's, you know, not really the point. But Steven Spielberg seems affected. When he gets a bad review, you know, it seems to bother him. I don't think Lucas cares what anyone says about him ever.
Yep.
Ben?
Yeah, good for him. Whatever. I mean, it's his. You know, Star Wars is his. It's his property. It came from his mind, and he can do whatever he wants with it, technically. But, yeah, he does have a large, passionate fan base who were incredibly satisfied with the original trilogy. And I don't really understand why you would go in there with your scalpel and just do so much to it. It just makes no sense to me. And whether... or not, it was his original vision to do some of the things later that he couldn't do then. It's just, it makes you wonder, why can't you just live with what you had and what you were able to do so successfully? But with this Phantom Menace thing, you know, one thing I find interesting in going back to the poster, there's a big one sheet out where it's another kind of like one of those mosaics, you know, of you know, different characters and things from the movie. And square in the center of it is Darth Maul. And they're really trying to sell this re-release with this Darth Maul character, which I thought was one of the high points of The Phantom Menace. I thought it was just a really cool, badass character. And I really bought into the marketing, obviously, of this movie. And he was a big selling point. And I was so disappointed with how little screen time he ends up having in the movie. I think everything he does is cool. He's kind of a pointless character in the grand scheme of things, but I just don't think they spend enough time with him. And then he's gone after the first movie.
Well, they're sure not going to sell the movie with that twerp little kid.
Well, that's true. But what I don't understand about it is a guy that we talked about last week and someone who has become a box office draw and is one of the biggest action stars today is Liam Neeson. And he's in this movie. He's one of the protagonists. And he's nowhere to be found on the posters. Like, why are you not trying to sell this movie with a guy who is successfully selling movies? And all you really have to do is put lightsabers and the word Star Wars on a poster, and that'll probably get people into the theaters. But I just find that kind of
well,
puzzling.
You know why, though, Ben? Is because he is aiming squarely for 11-year-old boys who are going to go, like, cool, Halloween mask.
Right.
Who are not going to respect Liam Neeson.
That's
and the people
audience,
who like
yeah.
Liam Neeson are probably going to be like, are you kidding me? I'm not seeing this movie again. It's already stolen 2 hours of my life.
And they're not going to sell it with now Oscar winner Natalie Portman either.
Well, when you put Ewan McGregor, Darth Maul, Darth Sidious, Yoda, spaceships, a pod racer, and some mountains on there, why not throw Liam Neeson on there too?
Yeah, that's true. That is
but true. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I will say the pod race is a pretty cool scene, and it's the only halfway interesting thing that punk twerk kid that you mentioned does in the movie. But yeah, the rest of it is it's junk. I remember seeing this movie in the theater at the Fox 12 first opening day. And there weren't a lot of people in the theater, actually, because it was on a weekday. And I think we might have, I don't know, skipped a period of school to go see it. And I just remember the opening scene with those two alien dudes on one of the spaceships. And just, they had this really forced, horrible dialogue. And it's done with this racist accent, like Jamaican-type accent. And I just remember thinking, this doesn't feel right, you know? And I tried to convince myself throughout the movie, no, it's a Star Wars movie. It is good. People have lightsabers, and this is great. But I just remember from the opening scene thinking, this is off. This isn't working. And that was just a really sad feeling to have moments into it after I had been anticipating it for years. And it's just a really disappointing way to look back at these films by re-releasing it and just shoving it in our faces again.
All the commemorative Pepsi cans and Taco Bell merchandise tie-ins in the world.
Yeah.
Couldn't convince you that you liked it.
No, and I was telling somebody the other day that every time I eat Lay's potato chips now,
yeah.
Every single time I think of The Phantom Menace. Because I think that there was
so
a Lay's potato chip. Well, yeah, well, that's primarily, like you said, it's a cash grab. And, you know, that's what they're here to do. They're here to make money, and they're good at it. But it's just amazing that every time I do that, I think of Star Wars, and I think of those Pepsi cans, and that's just not how I want to remember Star Wars, you know?
Well, so there it is. Any guesses, anybody, on what takes the weekend?
I'm going to say that that because some people are going to be taking their Valentine's date early this weekend, since it's sort of middle of next week, it's on Tuesday. I'm gonna say The Vow pulls the upset and wins the weekend.
Ben,
I agree. I think The Vow is gonna do really well, but I don't know. I have trouble betting against Star Wars, and I don't know how many screens it's on because it's sharing 3D screens with Journey 2, you know, and there are only so many 3D screens out there, so. Tough call, but I'll go with The Vow, too.
And me, too. Whatever. So let's talk about the Alabama Theater continues its Thursday Club Cinema, and they're showing The Limey from your buddy, Ben, Steven Soderbergh, but I actually don't know a thing about this movie.
Ben, promo The Limey. Tell us why people should go see it at the Alabama Theater.
The movie is about a guy, an older man, who gets out of prison and hears that his daughter has been killed in Los Angeles, and he goes back to Los Angeles to find out what happened and find out who's responsible. And he finds out that a record producer named Peter Fonda, or I'm sorry, played by Peter Fonda, may have had something to do with it. So he sort of vows some sort of revenge on him. And it's told in a really sort of loose, non-linear way. It's really, really interesting. Great performance from Terrence Stamp as this British guy with a really interesting past. And it's shot in just a really terrific way and edited beautifully, too. And it's one of Steven Soderbergh's best. I really encourage people to check it out. And it would be really cool to see it on the big screen. I did not get that opportunity.
Well, now, is this, which Soderbergh is this? Lo-fi or, like, glossy?
It's kind of a combination. It's an extremely stylish movie, as his movies tend to be, and it looks great. It has a great soundtrack. So it sort of does have that mainstream Soderbergh flair. But again, I mean, the guy is an artist. He's an auteur for sure. And so you don't – none of that is sacrificed in the name of mainstream agenda anyway. So it's kind of a mixture.
All right. Well, people should check that out. And, you know, again, even if it's not your cup of tea, the popcorn cannot be beat at the Alabama Theater.
Always put you that popcorn.
Is that right?
Is it your FedEx box of it? Hello.
You really like the popcorn there? I've never had it there.
Excellent. It's quite good because it's more salty than it is buttery, and they make it in one of those old-timey little... Oh, it's so...
She's like...
And it comes
wine.
In a box.
She talks about popcorn the way some people talk about wine.
I will say, the one bad thing about it...
There's a note of cocoa in there.
All right. Well, it's delicious. Do you have anything in Tuscaloosa you'd like to plug, Ben?
Yeah, well, we still have The Descendants, the Alexander Payne movie that's up for a bunch of Oscars, and that's going to be at the Cobb Hollywood 16, where we don't have many other Oscar nominees, but we are also going to have at the Bama Theater on Tuesday the Roman Polanski movie Carnage, with a really good cast of four great actors, Jodie Foster, Kate Winslet, John C. Reilly, and recent Oscar winner Christoph Waltz. So, you'll at least get some great acting, for sure. And you'll see it. You haven't been able to see it in many places in Alabama. It might have come to the Edge for a short time, and maybe the Summit. I can't be sure about that. But it's a movie that did not get any Oscar attention. It got a couple of Golden Globe nominations, surprisingly.
Based on a play?
Right. Okay. I'm not exactly sure who wrote the play.
Not me neither.
But, again, a great cast. You can't really go wrong with the cast. I'm not as sure about the material, and it's Polanski trying something different with a black comedy, which I'm sure is very, very dark, but why not check that out, too? But, Francesca, I have a quick question for you, and Matt, you might be able to weigh on this as well. When we were at the Film Society at the University of Alabama, and when we showed movies at the Ferguson Center, we made popcorn, and we gave popcorn to people. And I'm not asking for your opinion on our popcorn. I don't want to be subjected to that.
No.
Sort
of let me tell
humiliation.
You, I know where this is headed.
Okay.
It was good popcorn. It was not as good as the Alabama Theater.
No, that's not where it was headed. But I appreciate it. People accused us of oversalting the popcorn so that they would be forced to buy drinks from the vending machines. Do you think that some movie theaters and places like the Alabama Theater actually do that? What do you think of that?
Wait. They do not.
Let me stop you right there, Ben, because not only would Francesca never accuse anyone of oversalting popcorn, she actually requests a little, sometimes a drink cup, just a spare drink cup. And asks them to pour popcorn salt in it so that she can bring more into the theater.
You don't even let me talk. The thing with the cup, I didn't know about, and a manager offered that to me one time, because some of the theaters do not have a separate container of popcorn salt that I can dump all over it.
Due to a medical condition, I'm no longer capable of eating popcorn, which is one of the great tragedies of any movie lover's life.
Of my life.
But before I stopped being able to eat popcorn, Francesca basically made it completely unbearable to eat popcorn because she completely coats it in salt. It's absurd how much salt she puts on popcorn.
It is fantastic how much salt I put on it. And yes, that same condition that's had you in the hospital twice, the silver lining of it is that you are no longer eating and criticizing my popcorn. It's your own popcorn.
I'm glad that you got something out of my illness, Francesca.
As am I, sir. As am I. So, my answer to you, Ben, is that there is no such thing as oversalting popcorn. And I will say that Rave Motion Pictures, The Future Now Showing, I think purposefully undersalt, perhaps, because they have one of those little condiment thing, like different flavors of seasoning, which the flavor is garbage. I just need popcorn salt. Anyway, so let's talk about the DVD picks for this week quickly. Coming out are the Michael Shannon movie, Take Shelter, and what's her name? Chastain. Is that her last name?
Yeah, Jessica Chastain.
Tiny Furniture, finally, is coming out on the Criterion Collection. Paranormal, I don't even want to talk about it. Paranormal Activity 3, whatever. It's coming out. That's all we're going to talk about, that movie. And there's also a documentary from PBS American Masters, Woody Allen, a documentary from PBS American Masters. So, picks, either of you gentlemen?
We saw the Woody Allen documentary, and I thought it was wonderful.
Oh, yeah, it was good.
Yeah, if you're, especially if you're a fan, but I think even if you're, even if you're only a casual fan of Woody Allen's, it's a great documentary on him. Very comprehensive and very insightful stuff. I obviously want to see Tiny Furniture because I haven't had an opportunity to yet. So I'm glad that it's finally on DVD. I'm excited about it. But Ben, I want to ask you in particular, because I think you just
leave the room.
No, I'm not gonna. We're not gonna get into specifics, but I know that you just saw Paranormal Activity 3, and I know that you're not a fan of the franchise. So, as somebody who thought it was a lot of fun and enjoyed my time watching that movie, I want to know what you thought of it. Someone who went into it, I'm sure, fully expecting to hate it.
Well, I want to talk about like what I thought was the scariest scene in the movie.
Describe it in detail.
Ben. Yeah,
that's not funny at all.
I'm sorry, Francesca. Okay, I'm sorry for real. I have to say I feel kind of burned by this series here. You know, I find them interesting because it gives these directors a perfect opportunity to toy with an audience and to manipulate them and to make them feel scared, and that's what horror movies are meant to do. And I can appreciate that, and they do it to an extent, but I have to say, this for me anyway, the series has gone 0-3. I was not as impressed as I had hoped to be with this. There are some really cool, scary moments down the stretch and everything, but I think once it finally makes its last little statement or whatever, and the narrative takes its last twist or makes its last twist, it just really falls on its face to me.
Would you at least say that 3 is the best of the series?
I guess they kind of all run together for me, but I will say that it had the least annoying people in it this time.
Yeah, I'm okay with that. I'll take that.
Well, so Ben, what would be your DVD pick this week?
Definitely recommend the Woody Allen documentary. I actually rewatched that this past week, and it's excellent. And for anybody who's not as familiar with him, Woody Allen, this serves as a great introduction to him and just really shows you how much of a star, or I hate to use the word icon, but it's kind of true, he really was, or what kind of a figure he was in the mainstream. This guy was on every single talk show there was, and so he's in everybody's living room, so he was a household name for sure. And while people weren't as familiar with his films and his very specific style of comedy, they at least knew who Woody Allen was. And I mean, we talk about guys who don't have anything to offer but looks alone, but I mean, this guy was someone people considered a sex symbol back in the 60s and 70s, which I find incredibly interesting, because I mean, if you just point to Woody Allen now and tell somebody, yeah, that guy was a sex symbol way back when, they'd say, no.
I love the recent interviews that have started coming out with Diane Keaton, who always talks about, anytime you hear her, she'll talk about how Woody Allen had an amazing body.
Yeah.
It's so weird.
I'll tell you what.
Might think it was interesting.
What's that?
A scientist might think it was an interesting object to study, perhaps.
Right.
But you know what? You forget, though, like, presumably the people who found him to be a sex symbol were ladies, and I can, you know, I think Matt can speak to the fact that the celebrities who I have crushes on are not Channing Tatum. They're generally people who have a bit more character and a bit more interest to their looks, I would say.
Like Paul Giamatti?
Yes.
He's a stud.
Jay Baruchel?
Oh, you mean because that's you? No, I mean, but it's funny. There was that Joe Namath documentary that came on HBO recently where you see that Joe Namath had a talk show back when he was an active NFL player and was a huge star. And on his show, he had so many big celebrities. And they showed a clip where Woody Allen was one of the guests. And he's asking Woody Allen, what do you think of your status as a sex symbol now? And Woody Allen says something to the extent of, well, you have to be born with this like primal animal magnetism. And
right.
you don't have it, Joe, and I don't think
there. He says it's just not something I can explain to you.
I don't know if there's anything I can do for you. So right. I thought that was great. But no, that's a really good documentary. It's very well done. It covers a lot of ground and it covers it pretty well. But another one, Tess will kill me for showing any interest in this. My wife, she's a huge fan of Shakespeare, but recently released on DVD was that movie Anonymous, directed by Roland Emmerich. And I can't say the trailer intrigued me. It was one of those trailers that appeared before every single movie you saw in the theater, and that was annoying. But some people that I like have said that it's pretty good and just ridiculous entertainment. So I may end up checking it out on the Redbox. But at the top of the list is Take Shelter, for sure.
Yeah. Well, you know, that was a movie that, seeing the previews, I was like, that looks interesting, but I think it would really, like, stress me out and upset me. And I've kind of gone, like, maybe I could watch it on DVD. Like, movies that are stressful I can take better in my own home when I can, like, you know, open Angry Birds if I need to while I'm watching it, just to kind of, like, you know, be watching it, but still be like, but this is life. Life isn't scary and stressful and upsetting. So it's one that I might, you know, maybe on DVD I could watch. I don't know. Maybe not. I could get too stressed. I don't know. Whatever. But it's a pretty good, other than that Paranormal Activity business, looks like it's a pretty good week for DVDs, which is good since it doesn't look like a great week for movies in the theater.
Can I say one more thing real quick before we go?
No. Goodbye. Just kidding. Go ahead.
Well, I will anyway. Well, today, as we're recording this, today is John Williams' birthday, his 80th birthday, the great film composer. And, I mean, this guy, obviously everybody knows his music, even if they don't know his name. He did Star Wars and Jaws and the Indiana Jones music and so much more. But I've gone and listened to so much of his music today just to sort of celebrate the guy. And, I mean, just going back, I was just so unaware of so much of his music because I was so enamored with the movies that they appear in. And I mean, he really is, aside from those famous themes that we're so familiar with, he really is an incredible composer who did a lot of great work that managed to fade into the background. And that, to me, is the skill of both him and Steven Spielberg. But I've gone back and watched some of the movies he composed, and I've just gone to YouTube and checked out some of the music. And I would really encourage people to go to our website, Matt and Matt's website, filmnerds.com, where a friend, you know, to this show and contributor to that website, Ben Stark, who's a Huntsville filmmaker, has offered up his top 10 John Williams tracks from Steven Spielberg movies. It's a really great read, and you get 10 for sure, you know, just surefire great songs that you can listen to. So people will go to filmnerds.com and check that out.
I approve of that message, Ben. And with that, we will say good night and good luck, and we'll see you at the movies.
Nice. I like that sign-off.
Yeah, we won't see you at the movies, though, by the way.
You effectively stole Edward R. Murrow and Siskel and Ebert's taglines there.
Out there as well. Be excellent to one another.
And stay classy.
And have a pleasant tomorrow.
Yeah.
San Francisco.